This is Art Kaplan, and welcome to this edition of Both Sides Now. Today, we're going to take a look at a controversial issue that evokes strong feelings from physicians, both pro and con. Should random drug testing be mandatory for physicians, as it is now for pilots and many other licensed professionals in many fields who are responsible for people's lives and safety? Clearly, doctors who practice under the influence of drugs or alcohol risk endangering their patients. But how widespread is this problem, and is testing the answer? There's been quite a bit of talk about this issue, particularly since 2014, when Proposition 46 appeared on the California ballot. One item in that initiative would have required drug and alcohol testing of doctors and the reporting of positive tests to the California Medical Board. The proposition was defeated, but the debate goes on. The subject is likely to arise again, according to reports, between 10 and 15% of U.S. physicians suffer from a substance use disorder. That's a rate slightly higher than that of the U.S. population as a whole. Medscape's 2016 ethics survey report of over 7,500 physicians showed that 41% said yes, physicians should be tested, but 42% said no, 18% it depends. So joining me now to talk about these divisive issues are Cheryl Karcher, who's a board-certified dermatologist and an expert on aesthetic medicine.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me here.
And Craig Klugman, who is a bioethicist and medical anthropologist out at DePaul University in Chicago. Craig, thanks for coming as well.
Thank you for having me.
Let me just go right to the immediate question. Why do you think testing is important to do? Why should we randomly test doctors?
Number one, for a deterrent. Number two, I think there are a lot more physicians and nurses that are addicted than one would ever know. Three, public safety. And four, for the physician himself to, you know, make sure that he's okay.
You think there are some folks who don't even know they may have a problem?
Oh, yeah. It can start early. It can start light. It can start easy and develop into a bad problem. And there are a lot of people that are probably getting there. They don't know they have it.
Mm. So, Craig, you know, what's the downside here? Why should we think a little bit harder, perhaps, about random testing?
Well, the downside is that the tests are not very accurate, that it's a huge violation of privacy, and that there actually aren't very good studies that show that this makes a difference, that it actually does deter, it actually protects any patient's lives.
So, Cheryl, some people say, well, wait a minute, we don't have to randomly test everybody. After all, if I was a pathologist or, I don't know, had some medical practice where I was an administrator, I'm not directly caring for patients. Maybe we should highlight certain specialties where there might be more availability of drugs to abuse or direct clinical care. You know, I'm thinking of the anesthesiology and the classic. Does that make more sense, or you think random testing?
All of this makes sense, and I agree with Dr. Klugman's points as well. The problem is it would be very difficult to randomly test everyone in the hospital that has patient care. It'd be very difficult to use that draconian method where you're going to be tested. I don't think it would work.
So you started to say, what? Why do you think that's so difficult to test the specialties but not, you know, do that as opposed to just testing everybody? It might be cheaper, might be...
Well, that's one possibility. I mean, there are a lot... This is a very deep, complicated issue. Anesthesiologists have a 2.5 times more, you know, probability of becoming addicted because of access. And if we were to test everyone, all of the healthcare providers, physicians and nurses, it would be too draconian. Physicians would not want to work at that hospital. Mm. They would be afraid of coming up. And not to mention that a lot of the drugs that are being abused aren't even on the drug panel. So it's a tough issue.
On the other hand, there are a bunch of fields, pilots, train engineers, all kinds of bus drivers here, you know, in big cities, subway conductors. There are a lot of folks who get tested. And I don't know, are they freaking out about their privacy?
Well, in some circumstances they do. What we know is that when you are a member of a profession where there is an expectation of testing, it doesn't necessarily deter people as much as it helps them to get really creative. They sort of figure out like how many days they have to wait between using and getting the test. They have their websites you can go to where you can buy urine, where you can get chemicals that are supposed to help you pass the drug through your system even faster.
We saw some of this at the Olympics, right? That big Russian doping testing. People were, male athletes were showing up with female urine and, you know, it was, I know that in the NFL, people have devised all kinds of ways to smuggle in urine and have some kind of catheter thing on the side and so forth. So what about that? Is it impossible to really do this?
It's obviously not easy, or it would have been implemented. As Dr. Clubman said, we can be very creative. I know this personally by friends who have done this. And I think that perhaps this is what at least New York State is trying to do, not having the hospital or the physicians implement screening, but having, once there's suspicious behavior or, abnormal behavior, perhaps going to that physician.
So some indication that there might be a problem. A report from somebody else, that kind of trigger?
Sure. That also is going to have their critics, because what are you going to do, spy on them and go after them all day long? It's a really difficult subject.
In your own work, when you were tempted, fell into drug abuse, how did you get a handle on it? What led you to, was it testing? Was it people saying there's something off? What was going on with you?
Well, first of all, nobody wants to be an addict. Nobody sets out to be an addict, particularly physicians who have worked so hard. Mm-hmm. They don't wake up one day and say, I think I'm going to pop some Percocet and become addicted, or I'm going to shoot up some fentanyl. They're either self-medicating or for whatever reasons, they become addicted.
Craig, what about the claim of the harms done, though? You know, let's take this from the patient point of view for a second. Sure. I don't want to be operated on by someone who's got a drug abuse problem. I worry that they're not thinking straight, or they're only thinking about, you know, how do I get out of here so I can get my next whatever it is that I need. Isn't this a safety issue? I mean, we're spending a lot of time in healthcare saying we got to be safer, we want to get rid of errors, and we want to beef up, you know, hand washing. Doesn't this fit in?
So, I mean, when we do test professionals, we tend to do it for people who are involved in professions where the public safety is in their hands. So pilots and the military, right? The question, and there's no doubt that we do not want people who are actively high treating patients. But there become some challenges here. Is this the most effective way to prevent that from happening, right? Does it really make a difference?
So somewhere between 1% and 15%, there's some kind of problem going on. But you think there's a tip of the iceberg problem, too, just from your own experience.
I take part in a meeting for physicians, and maybe we'll have 8 people, maybe we'll have 10 people out of all the hospitals in New York. Mm-hmm. I know that there are certain fields that get help quicker than others. Anesthesiologists get help because they're found passed out on the floor. Mm-hmm. Psychiatrists get help because I think they have a little bit more insight. I don't know, but we have a lot of psychiatrists and anesthesiologists. Do you really think a surgeon is going to go and say, oh, I have a problem with, you know, alcohol. Can you help me? No. No, number one, it's too risky for them.
It's a career ender.
It's a career ender. It really is. And I don't know what the answer is. I think it's very possible as well that drug testing may not help. It may not. I don't know that anybody knows. I know that I think Mass General tests their anesthesiologists.
Mm-hmm. I think Mayo does too.
Cleveland Clinic tests the anesthesiologists. I personally don't know how that's going. But I don't know what the answer is. I just know I have a lot of personal experience with physicians with issues, you know, physician addicts that are in recovery. What I don't have experience really is the physicians that don't get help. I only see the physicians getting help.
Sure.
The problem with this sort of random testing, though, or even just testing people in very specific disciplines, is that we make the assumption everybody is a criminal. that you have done something wrong. And that is an assumption that drug use in itself is wrong, which is on a whole, we could spend another hour arguing. There are,
well,
however,
you know, if it's my surgeon, it's wrong. I don't know about.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if
it's, so, I mean, for the doctors who self-identify, many states, I don't know if New York is one of them, but many states have physician health programs where if you volunteer, you tell the medical board, I have a problem, and they will provide you with counseling, with a 12-step program, with mentoring, and they will see you through this and help you recover, and it does not affect your license. So if you're a surgeon and you self-identify, it is not a career ender. In fact, if you admit and ask for help, you save your career and hopefully save a patient's life because you will not be operating. So the problem is, as Cheryl says, the people that don't self-identify.
That's a very, very, very good point. And New York State has a great physician health mm-hmm. program. The problem, as I see it, is the stigma is so high that I believe physicians don't. I didn't put myself into CPH, our Committee for mm-hmm. Physician Health. I didn't self-identify because I was ashamed, because I didn't want to lose my practice, and for legal issues. I didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if they were going to say, oh, here's this doctor, she's been doing Percocet, and then contact the medical board, and then I'd have my license taken away. I was so afraid of that that I literally went to lawyers who said, don't self-report.
You're going to be monitored. Do you think physicians over-prescribe addictive drugs to one another? I mean, we hear about the OxyContin problems and these problems of, you know, misuse of opioid-type drugs in the general population. Are physicians doing the same thing to one another?
Certainly not anymore.
Nope. Because?
Because the hammer has come down and there's this big computer in the sky, you know? Mm-hmm. It's so funny. I know that I was at dinner the other night and I heard somebody talking about their sister that came home crying because the physician would not give her any more pain pills for her back. And she was devastated. I think that's horrible. It's horrible. Not everybody that takes Percocet's going to get addicted. You know, most people that take Percocet need it for pain. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I consider this such a complex issue. Mm-hmm. And it's a travesty in my eyes that people aren't being treated for pain because of something somebody like me or others of us have done. Mm-hmm. I'm very sorry about that. Mm-hmm. You know, people should have pain pills for the pain.
So, you know, if a doc has a bad back or maybe they're in a state, Craig, where medical marijuana's legal or recreational marijuana's legal, are we going to come after them?
Well, we are. So if you're in a state that has legal medical marijuana and you have need of it, you have a condition that qualifies you to take it, it's still against federal law, right? And the hospitals still don't allow it. So if you show up to your, you know, your clinic and you have been taking physician prescribed or recommended medical marijuana, you could still be fired for being on an illicit substance. So we are, you know, I think part of the issue is we're taking this blanket look of people who are using drugs at any part of their life. And maybe you can have medical marijuana after you're done with your clinic for the day, knowing that you will no longer be high by the time you start in the morning, or take your Percocet knowing it will wear off by then. You know, we need to look at this narrow piece of how it's affecting the patient care. And is our concern that, you know, it's a moral issue, that it's about character and nobody should be doing this? Or is it, if it's there, then it's we don't want people using while on the job. And I think it's an important distinction.
Yeah, I think there are issues around professionalism, but I think for most patients and for most peers in medicine, I think it's job performance. They worry about harm. They worry about what's going to happen. So as I look at this sort of challenge of tests that aren't perfect, stigma, varying attitudes state to state about what drug is okay, what drug isn't okay, I'd like both of you to tell me, look, even if I did have testing, am I really going to get reduction in harm, because that, I think, is the goal, Do we know that the programs we have out there work? You mentioned the alcohol success rate or sobriety success rates, but do the programs work anyway? Do we have a lot of recidivism? I don't know. So, Craig, what's your thought?
So, I mean, the thing is, we've had some social experiments of this in other areas, right? So several states have had mandatory random drug testing for people who have received public assistance, Michigan, Utah. So Michigan in 2014 tested 443 people who were receiving welfare and were suspected of drug abuse. So it wasn't everybody, it was people that they had suspicion of. Zero of them tested for positive. Utah screened and tested all welfare recipients. It cost them $30,000. They found 12 people positive for drugs. So there's this cost-benefit analysis that I think we need to consider. And when we're looking at these populations where we have done this sort of blanket screening or even screening of populations that are suspected of using drug, it has not increased safety. It has not led to suddenly a bunch of people going out to get assistance in dealing with their problems. It hasn't done any of the things that we talk about that this should do.
So, Cheryl, listening to Craig, you know, those are heavy-duty efforts for low yields, but you sit often in a room with people who want help or know that you've struggled and beaten back addiction. Do we know that there are enough people out there who could effectively help people, even if the testing did work, even if it, you know, really did pick up through random testing a lot of folks who may not recognize they're getting into trouble? What's your confidence level that we can help?
Well, first of all, the subject matter, physicians have access, and that's what makes it a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Physicians have access to pharmacopoeia.
Right.
And in order to get help, I really believe that a physician will only listen to another physician, and an addict was only going to listen to another addict. So I really feel like you need a physician addict to talk to other, you know, potential.
And do we have that kind of expertise out there?
I wouldn't say we have expertise. We do have psychiatrists, addiction psychiatrists now. You know, there's the nice field of addiction psychiatry. But what I have found in, and with the internet, there's a whole international society of doctors that are in recovery. What I do know is I don't want my surgeon with any blood level of alcohol. I don't want my surgeon with any level of opiates. And do you know how many physicians I have heard, oh, man, I was a rock star when I was using?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't think they're deterred. They think they're rock stars. So you can't ask them, do they have an issue? Because they think
self-assessment poor.
I'm sorry. I would say, you know, yeah, that putting emphasis in sort of changing the culture, right, reducing the stigma, encouraging people to be more open about this, having more programs like the physician health programs and support groups is definitely a great way to go that avoids sort of the stigma and treating everybody as if they're criminals. And also consider that if you take a testing thing, 5 to 10% of tests have false positive and 10 to 15% are false negatives. So somebody could be using, and in 15% of the time, we won't know it because it'll come up as a false negative. And somebody will also, you know, in 100 people, 10 of them will come up positive who aren't using. And given the repercussions and the stigma and the licensing issues that could happen, do we really want to subject people who have done nothing to that sort of situation?
So I'm going to wrap up our discussion, which has been great. And I've learned quite a bit from both of you about the complexity of this problem. What would you tell a person who says, I think I have a problem? What would you say?
I would say if you think you have a problem, you probably do.
Mm-hmm.
People who don't have problems don't think they have problems. That's number one. And number two, in the softest, gentlest, most loving way, I would say, well, you know, there are caduceus meetings. And your physician is going to say, but
and
I don't want to.
Caduceus meetings.
Caduceus meetings is a 12-step recovery meeting for physicians. And they will say, but I don't want anybody to know. And which is how I felt. I didn't want anybody to know. But the fact is you're sitting with people that have the exact same issue that you do. And there are a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would send them to a caduceus meeting. And if they didn't want to do that, I would say, well, try to stop drinking for 90 days and see what happens, or see if you can.
I know from both of you, I've learned a great deal today, because when I started our discussion, I was thinking, sure, random testing. I don't know. Why not? Let's do it tomorrow morning. But it's more complicated. Test accuracy, stigma. Is that the most effective way? Is it a deterrent? There are a lot of unknowns here. So I think the issue deserves much more thought. And hopefully we've given our audience some tools and some things to think about through your excellent discussion and comments. So let me thank you both for being on Both Sides Now. And I'm Art Kaplan.